Game on 2FM with Green Farm. B vitamins equal big benefits. The new Green Farm added benefits range is packed with essential B vitamins. Available in store now.
Game on, weeknights from 6
on 2FM.
Yes, a big thank you to the two Johnnies for another entertaining afternoon of radio. It's Tuesday the 26th of April. I'm Shane Dawson and you're listening to Game On. Coming up this evening, the action is underway at Punchestown. We'll bring you up to speed on how day one of the racing has fared so far.
Anergamine's back in front now to the last. Anergamine's over. He's a bit quicker this time and the gap opens as they race up towards the line. The gap widens really wide. Now Anergamine, the Cheltenham champion chaser, is the William Hill Punchestown champion chaser as well. Anergamine doubles up. It is Paul Townend and Willie Mullins off the mark. Jacques and Courtois is second this year.
In association football, we'll get the thoughts of Didi Haman and Mark Langdon as Pep's Manchester City take on Carlo's Real Madrid in their Champions League semi-final first leg.
Well, if we have to compete with the history, we'll have any chance. They are better. So history speaks for itself. Before the last decade, we were not almost never here. Now we start to be here and yeah, it's good. It's good. Always will be winning, reaching the final, or reaching the final will be a good lesson for us, good learnings for us, that's for sure.
Plus, Jeff Shepherd sets us up for the NFL draft, and Donald Fallon is in studio to take a closer look behind the science of sport. As always, if you want to get in touch, you can do so by texting us on 51552 or tweet at Game On 2FM.
Game On 2FM.
Yes, hello there. It is great to have your company wherever in the world you are tuning in from. And I'm in the company of Donald Fallon, who will be chatting to you in just a few moments. But first, a couple of news headlines to get through, starting with rugby. Ireland centre Sene Naupu has been cleared to play against Scotland in the TikTok Women's Six Nations this Saturday after the red card she received against England was rescinded. The United Rugby Championship are exploring the possibility of creating a women's competition while discussions are planning and planning are still at a very early stage. Development is very much a priority for the URC. So very much watch this space there. According to URC bosses, Munster and Ireland prop Dave Kilcoyne will undergo neck surgery this week, ruling him out of the rest of the season, including Ireland's tour of New Zealand, unfortunately. Very sad news, actually, in soccer. Former Limerick FC goalkeeper Freddie Hall has died, aged just 37. Hall signed for Limerick back in 2015 and established himself as a popular figure among teammates and supporters. He helped the Munster club to the 2016 First Division title but moved on to this, in the spring of 2018. Hall was capped 10 times by his native Bermuda. So sincere condolences to all of Freddie Hall's family, friends and indeed former teammates there. Sticking with soccer, Finn Harps have been hit with a major injury blow after captain Dave Webster was ruled out for the rest of the season because of serious knee injury. A 10-man UCD overcame Queen's University Belfast 2-1 to capture the Irish University's Collingwood Cup for the 48th occasion in this afternoon's final in Oriel Park, Dundalk. In tennis, Novak Djokovic will be allowed to defend his Wimbledon title after all England club officials confirmed players will not be required to be vaccinated to compete at the tournament this summer. And finally, some Gaelic Games news from this morning. RT Sport GA reporter Damien Lawler reporting that Conor McKenna will be available to play for Tyrone against Derry this weekend. McKenna was last night cleared to play against Rory Gallagher's side in Sunday's Ulster quarter final at Healy Park. As I mentioned earlier, Donald Fallon, is live in studio, and Donald will be chatting a bit about Brainstorm TV, your new series coming up on RT Television a little bit later on. We'll be discussing a rake of topics, to be fair. I suppose it is a sports show, and the sports topic we'll be focusing on today is you'll be revealing who mathematically is the greatest snooker player of all time.
Yeah, and thankfully that task falls onto someone else's shoulders. That's the mathematician Joey O'Brien who'll be answering that one. But it's an interesting thing to think about, isn't it? And you know, to what extent is the answer to that question that we give in any sport, who is the greatest, shaped by who we follow or what we like? So you might say the greatest League of Ireland player of all time is Tony Sheridan.
Yeah.
I would say it's Paul O'Sam.
you're wrong.
when it comes to personal bias, we all have our views. But Joey has developed a mathematical equation that answers the question, who is the greatest snooker player of all time?
Okay, well, I cannot wait for that chat. Donald Fallon will be sticking around for that chat a little bit later on. And indeed, Joey O'Brien, the mathematician, will be chatting who the greatest snooker player umpire is of all time, and much more besides. But first, we must turn our attention to horse racing, and we have Don McLean live in Punchestown for us. Don, another Gordon Elliott trained horse has just won at Punchestown there, I believe, in the last few moments.
Yeah, incredible, Shane. Four, Absolute Notions just won the Gosland Rover Bumper. That's four winners for Gordon Elliott out of the five races today. That brings his career total up to 1,999. So one more winner, and Gordon Elliott will have trained 2,000 winners in his career. Quite an incredible achievement. I suppose the highlight of the four of them was Mighty Potter's win in the Bechter Stud Champion. That was hurdle earlier on. He was a 20-1 shot in that race, but he won well. He stayed on really well for Jack Kennedy. And yeah, as you say, Absolute Notions just after winning the Gosland Rover Bumper.
Yeah, huge shock there, I suppose. Shock of the day with Mighty Potter winning, because it was previewing Punchdown yesterday with Ruby, and it was all about Sir Gerhard, Dysart Dynamo as well. So Mighty Potter 20-1 and Gatsby Grey 100-1 coming second as well.
Yeah. I suppose Dysart Dynamo, he was beaten a fair way out, Shane. He led early, and he is quite a free-going type. I think he had a little bit of an issue during the race. He was just beaten far too early for it to be his true running, so hopefully he'll be back. And Sir Gerhard, he travelled okay through his race. Mighty Potter moved up on his outside and moved up and into the lead around the home turn. And yeah, when Paul Tennant asked Sir Gerhard to pick up, he just couldn't go with Mighty Potter. Mighty Potter, I know he's a 20-1 shot, but he's a very talented horse, Shane. He went to Cheltenham with big hopes, and he underperformed there. He ended up pulling up, I think, at Cheltenham. But again, that wasn't his running. And I suppose we punters were kind of fickle beings. A horse disappoints and then you kind of scratch him, and yeah, he was like off a 20-1, which was a look, these things are easy in hindsight, but a very big price for a horse of his ability.
Absolutely. So a couple of shocks, but the 5.25 champion Chase went to form, I suppose, and Ergamin the favourite winning out Chacon Persuas second.
Look, it was a really good race, this, between Chacon Persuas and Ergamin, the two stable companions to William Mullins trained horses, obviously. And Chacon Persuas set the pace early on under Patrick Mullins. He didn't appear to go a great pace, just a nice kind of solid pace, and they all seemed to travel well in behind. We lost Andy Dufresne at the first fence. He came down, he just got in tight and came down. Thankfully, Mark Walsh and he got up and walked away, so that was good to see. And then after that, it was just a four-horse race, the two Willie Mullins-trained horses against the two Henry de Bramhead-trained horses, Envoy Allen and Captain Guinness. And just as they raced across the top of the track, that's when Patrick Mullins injected a little bit of pace, and Captain Guinness and Envoy Allen kind of got left behind a little bit. So it developed into a match between the two Willie Mullins horses into the home straight. And Ergamin made a wee bit of a mistake at the second last fence, and that gave Chacon Persuas a little bit of an edge. But once Paul Townend asked Ergamin to pick up, he'd caught his stable companion by the time they got to the last fence. He jumped that well, and he stayed on well. Look, he's a really talented horse in Ergamin, Shane. He won the champion chase at Cheltenham, obviously filling one of the last glaring omissions from Willie Mullins' CV. It was his first champion chase. He's only been beaten once in his chasing career. That was by Shishkin in that Clarence House chase at Ascot back in January. But yeah, and he's only an 8-year-old, so yeah, like we still may not have got to the bottom of an Ergamin's talent.
Okay, well, a day dominated with Gordon Elliott, but that is a bit of positivity for Willie Mullins. There are three races left in the day, the highlight being, of course, the Grade 1 in about 24 minutes' time, the Champion Novice Chase. What's the word down on the track? Is this all about Bob Olinger?
It is, yeah, it's all about Bob Olinger. He's stepping up to 3 miles for the first time. And yeah, look, he won at Cheltenham, but he wasn't at his best there. He would have been beaten by Galopin Deschamps if Galopin Deschamps hadn't come down at the final fence. But he came back again with a slight setback. I think he had a torn muscle in his back, or in his back legs. So, Henry de Bramhead reports him in tremendous form. He's another really talented horse. He won the Ballymore Hurdle at last year's Cheltenham Festival, and he's been good over fences before. He went to Cheltenham, albeit he won the Grade 1 race at Cheltenham, but stepping up to 3 miles now for the first time, that's very interesting, because all his runs have been over 2.5 under rules, but he's a horse who shapes as if he will get further, so it's going to be very interesting to see him over the longer trip. I suppose his main rival is Capodanno, another Willie Mullins trained horse whom he beat here in the Kildare chase back in January. But Capodanno, he's another talented horse. He only has 5 lengths to find with Bob Olinger on that running. And it's good to see Alex Hales sending over Miller's Bank from Britain. He won the Grade 1 Manifesto chase at the Aintree Grand National Meeting, and he comes here on the high, and you've got Beacon Edge and Fury Road in there as well. Lifetime Ambition, Ballyshannon and Rose. There are only 7 runners, Shane, but it's a deep race. And yeah, Bob Olinger, he's going to have to perform if he's going to beat his rivals today, I think.
Okay, good stuff. Just very briefly, Don, before I do let you go, game on. The Roadcaster will be down there tomorrow and for the rest of the week, but unfortunately I won't be. It'll be Marie presenting tomorrow, but I do have to pick your brain. Gold Cup Day tomorrow. Last year's winner, Clondais Oval, Alaho, Minella, Indo were among nine runners declared for the Punchestown Gold Cup tomorrow. Where, what or who are you drawn to here?
Yeah, Minella Indo is the horse I like, Shane. He's a really game, stamina laden horse who seems to get better as the season progresses. He finished second in the Gold Cup this year, beaten only by his stable companion Absolute Tard, and he won the Cheltenham Gold Cup last year. And back when he was a novice, he came on here after winning the Albert Bartlett Hurdle at Cheltenham. They made Alaho favourite to beat him, but he beat Alaho that day here. That's 3 years ago now. Alaho is the favourite and a worthy favourite. He's brilliant over 2.5 miles, but he still has to prove his stamina for 3 miles. So Alaho as favourite, I think maybe he's a favourite to take on. For all that he is talented, I just think the trip might stretch his stamina at least close to his limit. And as you said, Clondais Oval coming over again. Paul Nicholls, brilliant that he's coming over. He's won the Betway Bowl at Aintree this season, like he did last season before he came on here and won the Punchestown Gold Cup. So he's willing to repeat that feat, and you wouldn't put it past him.
Okay, good stuff, Don McLean. Thank you very much for taking the call. Lots of entertainment on day one of the Punchestown Festival, of which you can see on RTÉ television. And as I mentioned, the RTÉ 2FM Roadcaster will be down there for the week as well. So if you are in Punchestown, do drop by and say hello. So, turning our attention to soccer, in a few moments time I'll be chatting to Didi Haman on tonight's big Champions League semi-final. It is of course Manchester City versus Real Madrid, so do stay tuned.
RTÉ 2FM. Game on 2FM with Green Farm. B vitamins equal big benefits. The new Green Farm added benefits range is packed with essential B vitamins. Available in store now.
Game on.
Football.
Now, you're very welcome back to Game on this Tuesday evening, as we turn our attention to football and specifically the UEFA Champions League. The semi-finals are tonight and tomorrow. The first leg, I should say, of the semi-finals are tonight and tomorrow. Will it be an all-English final or will Spain reign in the semi-finals? I'm glad to say Didi Haman joins me now to chat all things football. And I suppose, Didi, starting with Manchester City versus Real Madrid, you're on punditry duty for RTÉ Sport along with Richie Sadlier. What are you most looking forward from this Galactico clash?
Well, Real Madrid found a way in the last two rounds against Paris, against Chelsea. They were all put out in both legs, really, and they found a way back. So today they come up against one of the two best sides in Europe at the moment, I think, for Liverpool. So let's see whether they will stand the test and get a result in Manchester to take it back to the Bernabeu and still have a chance to go through.
In terms of key matchups, and I mean, we've seen how potent Karim Benzema was, Luka Modric rolling back the years as well. I mean, there is an over-reliance, I suppose, on Real Madrid's more experienced players, but they're still getting the job done. How much of a challenge will they pose to Manchester City? Is it a case of just relying on the same guys? But when the same guys are that good, then happy days.
Yeah, well, as I said, I think they've been a bit fortunate in both legs. But then again, you've got to give them credit to find a way to pull through and go through to the next round. I think what will be key tonight is keeping the ball, because if you give the ball away cheaply to City, at times Madrid in this campaign, they looked a tired and an aging side. And if you do give the ball away cheaply to City, I think they will suffocate you. So, remains to be seen. There's a question mark about Casemiro, whether he can play. If he can play, I would probably not play Toni Kroos, because the last two times they decided for them, whether it was Chelsea or whether it was Paris, it happened after Toni Kroos came off and Camavinga came on. So, you know, I would probably start Camavinga if Casemiro was to play, because I think they need a bit of energy and legs in the middle of the park.
And for Manchester City, listen, we all know the narrative about how much Pep wants to win this trophy with Manchester City. It's one that has alluded to him. How much will he feel that pressure, do you feel, going into a match of this magnitude?
Well, I think huge, because up until last season, he never went past the last eight. They got to the final last year. I think he made a major hiccup with not playing Rodri, with playing Gundogan in the holding role. Rodri's been the most probably the best player throughout the campaign, and he gives them balance in the side. So I think he's hugely to blame for that defeat and that loss in the Champions League final. So this is the one he wants to win, and this is why he's been brought to City, because they won the league before, they won the FA Cup before he came. But obviously this is the one, and the pressure will be huge. Everybody expects them to go through and probably play an all-English final, but they've got two tough games ahead of them. And I think how they approach it psychologically will be very interesting tonight.
Do you think he's learned his lessons then, I suppose, from last year and the mistakes that have occurred in the past that he's learned, and he's going to put them right, and we'll evidently see that this evening?
Well, it remains to be seen. We don't know yet, because obviously once or twice he fiddled about with the players, played somebody who wasn't really expected to play. Obviously he sees the team every week, but I think if you've got the best players, you just got to let him go and let him do. And I think the jury is still out. It remains to be seen whether he will keep to his best 11. He will let his side play to their strength, because if they do, they are formidable side, as we've seen against Liverpool a few weeks ago in the league. So, the jury is still out. I hope he has, but I'm not too sure.
So much potent attacking personnel at his disposal, Pep. Who do you feel he'll call upon and rely on and look to really get them over the line in terms of the team selection?
Well, the biggest disappointment throughout the season has got to be Grealish. You know, it's been a huge transfer in the summer, didn't really feature in the Euros, and he hasn't really made a starting place his own. So that's probably the biggest disappointment from that season. You know, Sterling's probably been the most influential and the most consistent. And then, you know, Mahrez got a very good record in the Champions League. And then probably Mahrez and Jesus, I would think, would be the front three. And then De Bruyne, it was a bit of a question mark whether he can play. Obviously, he has to play, because I think he's their most important player. But as you said, they've got so many options up front. He can pick either five or six.
Yeah, certainly do. Another team with many options up front is, of course, Liverpool. So it is Manchester City versus Real Madrid this evening. But just briefly, Didi, touching on tomorrow, can Villarreal upset the odds again, or will it just be business as usual for Liverpool?
Well, I wouldn't take him lightly. I've seen him both legs against Bayern Munich. They've been brilliant. They should have put the tie to bed in the first leg. They could have or should have had two or three goals. Yet they went to Munich. They got their late equaliser. And don't forget, in the last round, they beat Juventus away from home 3-0 in the second leg. It's a team that keeps the ball really well. And Bayern Munich was never able to really sustain pressure for longer periods of time. And I think where Liverpool has to be careful, because if you do let them play, they very rarely, very hardly give the ball away. So I think it's probably more of a test than people may think.
Okay, good stuff. Didi Hamann, pleasure as always chatting. Thanks so much for taking the call. Two massive Champions League semi-finals to look forward to, beginning, as I say, this evening with Manchester City versus Real Madrid, a match you can watch live on RTÉ2 television.
Game on.
Football.
So, for any eagle-eared or eagle-eyed listeners there, I chatted to Didi Hamann a little bit earlier on when we didn't have the Real Madrid team news. Just before we came on air, Didi took the call, and what I can say is Carlo Ancelotti does not listen to Didi Hamann, because Toni Kroos starts, Benzema captains the team, Courtois, Carvajal, Militao, Alaba, Modric, Valverde, Vinicius Jr., Rodrigo and Ferland Mendy all make the starting 11 for Real Madrid, who are naming their teams at rugby level, so they are, this early from kickoff. Was it? I think that news came out at about 6:15 or thereabouts. So that is Real Madrid team news, but some really fascinating insight from Didi Hamann, and we'll be getting the thoughts of Mark Langdon a little bit later on when we hope to have Manchester City team news as well. But Donal Fallon is still in studio, and Donal, we will be chatting about Brainstorm and everything with that with Joey O'Brien, the mathematician, as well in a few moments time. But listen, as Ruby Walsh pulled me up yesterday when I described Roy Keane as a former Cove Ramblers player, I could not let a fellow League of Ireland head come into studio without chatting a bit about the League of Ireland. And listen, I don't want to get too bogged down, but I do want to just focus on one good news story that has been doing the rounds, Gareth Penrose and extratime.ie, because we talk about the benefits or how positive it is, and the good news stories coming out of the league, and you know, it's on the rise and where can it go and facilities, etc., etc. But basically, when you look at the numbers, the league average attendances are going through the roof, which is great to see.
They're incredible. And I think people are immediately drawn to the Premier Division clubs. And there is an improvement in numbers in the Premier Division. But the numbers in the First Division are incredible. So they compared this season with previous years, but not last year and the year before. Because who was there bar the cameraman, really, in the ground?
That's fair.
The numbers have gone up for everything except baking banana bread or Zoom table quizzes. So they went back a couple of years. And in the First Division, the average attendance in 2017 was 503.
Yeah.
But this season, 1,281. That's amazing growth, isn't it? And that's an achievement of so many people.
Sure, the crowd even down in Coleman's Park for the Cork Derby, Cove and Cork last weekend as well. It was like nearly 4,000 or something. It's unbelievable. I've been down the Cove Ramblers, which you were saying, where there's about one man, a dog and a few Shells fans coming off, staggering off the supporters bus. So, you know, the appetite is there. We market it well. And across the board, listen, Shamrock Rovers obviously do so well in the Premier Division. Pats are kind of being at a steady rise throughout, Bows as well, and Shells, I suppose. You look at the rise, and I'm not just saying that. Listen, I know I'm not just saying it with a Shelburne hat on, but they have been in the First Division and they've been tied for crowds. I think it was 500 in 2017, 583 in 2016. But this year, to date, it's 3,302. So there is a rise. Derry as well always get good crowds, and Dundalk seem to be very kind of just steady as well.
Yeah,
so,
and we all remember a time when Con Houlihan, the sports journalist, once listed all the away fans in attendance at a match. There were so few of them. He listed the players, the subs and the fans. Yeah. So we've come a long, long way from being like these true believers into something very strange, into something that's gradually a part of the life of so many people.
Absolutely. And long may it continue, Donald. Long may it continue. Right, you're going to be sticking around because we'll be chatting about Brainstorm. We will be revealing who the greatest ever snooker player is. Mathematically, it's going to be proven by Joey O'Brien and Donald Fallon in a few moments' time. So do stick with us here on 2FM.
RTE 2FM. On 2FM with Green Farm. Green Farm's new added benefits range is enriched with all your B vitamins, which are essential for your health and well-being. Available in store now.
Game on 2FM.
So, who invented the leaving cert and should it be scrapped? Ever wondered why we count magpies or whether or not postcodes have an impact on house prices? What are the benefits of living with a dog? Who is the best snooker player of all time? Yes, Brainstorm. A new RT1 television series delivers fascinating and surprising answers on everything from hurling to hangovers and pollen to postcodes. So social historian Donald Fallon will be presenting this new five-part television series that seeks to answer a range of compelling and intriguing questions by talking to a number of experts, voices, and delving into a diverse range of ideas and topics across subjects that include science, sport, history and society. The first episode of Brainstorm airs on RT1 this coming Monday at 8:30. And one of the expert voices that Donald was chatting to is mathematician Joey O'Brien, who joins us on the line as well. And gentlemen, I want to chat about what was covered in episode one. And I have to say, I did get a sneak preview and it's a fascinating show. It's really, really entertaining. I'm not just saying it because Donald's staring glaring across from me and Joey can hear me on the line. So episode one focuses on the benefits of keeping company with a dog, Michael Collins' slipper and other really interesting artefacts in the National Museum, the origin of pollen allergies, which I found really quirky and interesting. And the piece I want to chat about you today is deciding the greatest snooker player of all time through a mathematical equation. So firstly, Donal, I want to come to yourself and just give us a brief synopsis on why you wanted to do this and how it came about, and then I'll be going to Joey to get into the numbers.
The show that will end pub rows all over the country on a whole variety of things. I just love the idea of taking researchers out of their comfort zone, you know, pulling them out of the universities that they work in and making them talk to us, the plain people of Ireland, about a whole host of things. And as you said, sport is in there because sport is one of the pillars of our lives. And if you have a look on the Brainstorm website, we have these lovely little articles, generally kind of 800 to 850 words, where researchers explain what they're working on, what it means, and why it's relevant to our lives. And I just found this one from Joey really interesting because it is a pub row that never ends. Who is the greatest anything of all time? I would have said Alex Hurricane Higgins, but I would have said that because he's a great character.
Okay.
So is it about who's a great character or is it about who's a great talent? How do we answer this question? And to meet someone, an applied mathematician who could answer it was amazing. In a snooker hall, by the way.
Okay.
Not sitting in a lecture hall.
Yeah.
Go to the snooker hall, play a game of snooker and try and answer this question.
Get down to it. And Joey, listen, you've the unenviable task now, because I watched the series and you described this through an equation that we can physically see. So all I can say is best of luck now trying to get this message across on the radio format.
That's a big problem. But the main idea is that we take the entire history of the sport of snooker, which is almost 50,000 games, and we look at who's played who and who's won. And if you're thinking about ranking, maybe you would just count the wins. But what we've actually went and done via the mathematical equation is to look at who defeated who. So wins against higher quality players are more important, and that gives a fairer ranking into who the greatest snooker player of all time actually is.
Okay, so in a case of, though, that players wouldn't have played against each other, I suppose, what's the workaround for that?
Well, the workaround from that is that if they've, well, anytime one player who's played any other player, there's a transfer of some level of quality, which we call prestige. So if a player hasn't faced another, maybe they've faced players that they've faced before, or they're linked some way throughout the system, and the equations can handle that.
Okay, so Donald mentioned there Hurricane Higgins. Obviously, you have the likes of Ronnie O'Sullivan. I suspect that would be there or thereabouts. Like, is it fair to say, though, world rankings in snooker are slightly off because it's based on prize money, but obviously more tournaments having more prize money on offer and so on. So when you're looking at who the best is, you can't necessarily just go off ranking points and positions.
Exactly. So at the moment, like you say, rankings are determined by prize money. That seems sensible, but the big problem is there's one single tournament, the World Championship, that's currently ongoing, that has a huge prize fund compared to the others. So if you do very well in that, it really does inflate your ranking and maybe overrepresents it, even if you had a very, very easy way to the final and win.
Okay, so let's get down to start naming names here. So Donald's gone with Hurricane Higgins. Is he there in the top three even? Ronnie O'Sullivan? I don't know. When I was even looking at it, Higgins, White, I'd probably say O'Sullivan myself. And listen, I do have to, I suppose, acting a bit, because I do know the answer because I watched the show. But beforehand, I genuinely would have said Ronnie O'Sullivan probably, and Higgins would have been up there. White as well would have been up there as well. But what does it boil down to, Joey?
Well, I was in the same boat as you, thinking Ronnie straight away. But when we crunched the numbers and ran our mathematical formulas, what actually came out was John Higgins.
Wow.
Who was ranked number one in the world.
Jeez, was that a shock to you, Donald?
Totally, totally. And it makes you think about how we I suppose, think of these athletes. I mean, I love someone like Hurricane Higgins because he was as often on the front of the newspaper as the back. Mm. So it's like George Best. You know, these are just great personalities. But the thing about prize money is interesting too, because we're all feeling inflation at the moment. You know, you go to the shops and go, oh my God, the value of money changes all the time. So to take prestige into account and the idea that, you know, a win isn't necessarily just a win, that there's another way of ranking these things. It was really interesting, and the equation plays out in front of you on screen on a snooker table, which is great.
Oh, you know, certainly is. It's fascinating. Listen, Joey, I know you're a bit stuck for time, so I will let you go shortly, but I do have to ask, how long did this take you? If you're looking at, what, 50,000 snooker matches?
It sounds like an awful lot, but we're very, very fortunate that we have great computers now that can handle this kind of stuff very quickly. So collecting the 50,000 games is kind of tricky, but once you have it, within minutes, you can get a ranking out, which is great.
Okay. And were you surprised with John Higgins?
Very surprised. But then, when I sat down and thought about it, he's been doing it for nearly 30 years now, consistently, and he's still in the World Championship so far, so let's see if it stands up.
Absolutely, yeah. I suppose there can't be a Higgins-O'Sullivan final, but I think there can be a semi-final.
Okay.
The draw has gone. So listen, fascinating stuff, and we're blessed to have, I suppose, all those snooker statistics. We're also blessed to have applied mathematicians like yourself, Joey, that aren't afraid to put in the dog work and get us results like that. So there you have it. Anyone who disagrees, Joey O'Brien, I think you're on Twitter. If anyone wants to have a go at you, it's all your fault that you disagree with. But you can't argue with science, can't argue with maths. Joey O'Brien, thank you so much for taking a call. Donald, listen, it is fascinating, and I know you mentioned in that first show you talk about dog companionships, the slippers worn by Malky Collins as well. Like, what was the most interesting segment? I suppose that's a difficult question to answer across the five-part series for you personally.
Yeah, look, if there's one thing we're not known for in this county, it's playing good hurling.
We're 2-2 at the moment.
Good
win against Wexford last week.
I went to school with the great Liam Rush and loved to watch him on the field. But this is Gaelic football country. But one of the pieces that I found really interesting was a guy, Kieran Moran from DCU, who was approached in 2003 by the GAA. And what they wanted to do was fix the schlitter. You know, there were all kinds of problems with the Schlitter in terms of consistency, different weights.
Yeah.
So you're getting crazy score lines depending on the Schlitter that was being used. There's another big problem, people couldn't see it. So tennis had that problem in the 1970s as well. This is, you know, what do we do about the ball that disappears into the clouds for spectators? So how did we end up with yellow Schlitters and digitized Schlitters? I didn't realise this, that you actually scan the Schlitter now and make sure it's up to scratch.
You can blame Brendan Cummins and Co for that.
So I find myself standing on Moby Road at Nafina, watching this guy from DCU fashion Schlitters off a wall with a baseball machine as he explains to me the science of how they fix the Schlitter. And I just found that amazing. And, you know, you might not be interested in science, but science is interested in you. Every part of our lives is shaped by people like Ciarán Moran and the work that they do.
Yeah.
So for me, yeah, the idea of talking to a lot of researchers in a university wouldn't be that interesting. But to go to a snooker hall, to go to Nafina, you know, to go to a boxing club, to take this into new places visually as well, it was really interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. And listen, I don't want to be fanboying here a bit, but you also have the podcast Three Castles Burning, which I've been listening to for many months now, and indeed through lockdown as well. It was a lifesaver, just getting out and walking with the dog, walking down the beach, and I was lucky enough and had your dulcet tones in my ears as well. But that's the point really around that, is you're telling stories that on paper perhaps people mightn't be that interested in, to be frank about it, but it's how you deliver it and it's how these people deliver it. And as you mentioned, a lot of the stories in the podcast as well, you're going down, you're not just doing studio interviews, you're going to the heart of the story, whatever street that this incident happened on, and it brings life to the tale.
Yeah, I mean, one guy we interviewed for this, Ronan Guilfoyle, he's a jazz musician and he teaches jazz and he's interested in rhythm.
Yeah.
So we went to St. Saviour's Boxing Club, which is in the old fire station under Set Street, and we watched kids training and boxing, and he talked about the rhythm of boxing, you know, order amidst chaos, as they call it. And to stand there and watch those kids box and to hear the rhythm of it, that was just really interesting stuff.
That's amazing. Listen, one other tale I do want to explore. I will be chatting to Jeff Shepherd on the NFL draft a little bit later on. So on the topic of American sports, the surprising rise of baseball in Dublin.
Yeah, League of Ireland fans might appreciate this, that at the top of the American football Premier League in Ireland are UCD. So
okay. Collingwood Cup champions, top of the American football. UCD are on the rise, lads.
one of the episodes I did on the podcast was about the history of baseball in Ireland with Peter Kavanagh, who's a true disciple out there in Glendalkin, where they have the baseball grounds. And he made a good point to me. He said, look, there's more and more Americans working in the city, especially in tech. Baseball's taken off because of that. Will we see more and more American football in the city, the country? Who knows? Definitely, you mentioned this to me, I know it too. Friends are starting to watch it.
Yeah.
So Irish people are getting interested in American football, but will we see a further increase in people playing the game here?
Okay. Yeah, no, certainly will be interesting. I'm after receiving a text, actually. 51552, by the way, is the text number if you do want to get
in touch. Disagreeing with Joey, I hope.
Well, no, it's actually a personal text more so. I mentioned walking with the dog and I got a text from my partner saying the dog has a name, so walking with Piper as well. Because I watched that segment on the show and people will be able to view it on Monday as well, about the companionship of what dogs bring to you and the importance and how that kind of is great for mental health and so forth. So it is very important, and that isn't a tongue-in-cheek comment. One other story, because we mentioned horse racing earlier and I don't want to put you on the spot here because we didn't mention this, but Arkell in Tolka Park, you've done a bit on that on the podcast series. It's not in Brainstorm specifically, but again, it's another really beautiful sports story intertwined with culture in Ireland.
I love the picture of Arkell going around Tolka Park. It's brilliant, isn't it, with Guinness for Strength advertisement on the hoardings. In that podcast, I mentioned the famous graffiti in Dublin. People might remember hearing about it, Arkell for President.
Yeah.
And it's mentioned in the newspapers, but I've never seen a picture of it, so I'm going to steal your platform and ask the people of Ireland, does it exist or is it an urban myth? But yeah, I mean, this goes back to what we're talking about, and the pieces in Brainstorm are similar. Sport isn't just about sport. Sport's about identity, it's about culture, it's about life in the broadest sense. And that's why I love stories like Arkell, or stories like the weird history of baseball in Ireland. You know, sport and identity are just intertwined is the word.
Excellent. And you mentioned it. Listen, it's about kind of going down to the local pub and having the argument, and it's a conversation starter as well, and it's what you want. And listen, if Ireland is the land of saints and scholars and so on, and we're great storytellers and exactly that. My final question to you, Donal, before we do have to take a short break, is just on Monday's show, so Bank Holiday Monday, 8:30, there is a sporting element that we've covered. Just briefly, I suppose, I know we are a sports show, but indeed we mentioned the companionship with dogs, the pollen issue as well, and where that comes from. But Michael Collins and his slippers.
Yeah, that was a lovely piece. That was on what's in the National Museum and how they preserve artefacts.
Yeah.
And, you know, why can't we see everything that's in the museum all the time? That's the big question. But even when you're in the storage rooms the National Museum, the sports artefacts that are there are incredible too, and we don't see everything all the time, and we're kind of talking to the museum about why that is. So it's all about how we, you know, protect, preserve artefacts from the past, and the possibilities are endless. Maybe we'll get our Irish Football Museum someday.
Hopefully, in a renovated Talca Park or Daily Mount Park. Who knows, Donal? Who knows? But listen, so there you have it. John Higgins is the greatest ever snooker player. And sticking with snooker news as well, the World Championships are on, of course. It is professional snooker's longest running and most prestigious and financially rewarding competition that is upon us, ongoing at the Crucible. Mark Selby won't be defending his title. He lost out to Yan Bing Tao. World number one Ronnie O'Sullivan won his first world championship over two decades ago in 2001, and he picked up a sixth in 2020, and he is on course for semi-final appearance against possibly John Higgins. He'll be hoping to make it a seventh title this year, more than any other player. And Ireland's Ken Doherty has today been handed a wild card to compete at the World Snooker Tour for the next two seasons. The decision was announced by World Snooker Tour chairman Steve Dawson, no relation, during day 11 of the World Championships, with seven-time Crucible winner Stephen Hendry also granted a two-year wild card. And some latest news from the horse racing is JP McManus's horse Capitano has just won the Dooley Insurance Cup Champion Novice Chase, rode by Mark Walsh. So from snooker, from horse racing to American football, stay with us.
RTE 2FM.
Game on
2FM with Green Farm. Green Farm's newest chicken and turkey range is full of B vitamins, which play a vital role in maintaining good health and well-being. Available in store now.
Game on.
Eye on America.
Now you're very welcome back to Monday evening's Game On. Shane Dawson here, and now I am delighted to say I'm in the company of Jeff Shepherd. And Jeff, we are going to chat all things NFL, and in particular the draft. I'm not sure if you're listening there a bit earlier, but we had historian Donal Fallon on, who was mentioning that baseball and American football are both on the rise in Ireland. So there'll be plenty of keen listeners here tuning in to get your thoughts on the draft. After months of scouting, the NFL teams will have their pick of the nation's top young football talent at this week's draft. It happens from Thursday, to Saturday. So I suppose a brief synopsis: it's in the Convention Center in Las Vegas. For any newcomers or new listeners or new fans of the sport, the draft, what is a brief explainer, Shep?
Yeah, sure. So each year there's a 7-round, you know, selection process that the 32 NFL teams go through, where they get to pick players from, you know, across the American college landscape, but you could also see guys drafted that could have potentially played college football in Canada, or maybe they played overseas somewhere too. And so each team typically has anywhere between 3 and 10 picks, just depending on kind of how things shake out. Sometimes you're awarded draft picks from other teams and trades and different things like that. So in the offseason, you basically have free agency where your players can, some of your players can look at other teams and go sign there for bigger money, and you can sign players away from other teams, and you have the draft. And Shane, it's interesting, if you're newer to this sport, and we have seen, kind of the rise of popularity with NFL football in Ireland, over the last couple of years. It's interesting to note, though, the teams that typically have the most success in the NFL and repeatedly have that success, they do it through the draft. You draft these players, you get them into your system, you build them up, and they kind of learn your way of doing things. Yes, you can go out and get a good receiver or a big lineman, maybe a quarterback in free agency, but it's going to cost you a lot more to do it that way than it is to do it in the draft.
Okay. Good stuff. So we've seen, I suppose, in the last couple of years, Trevor Lawrence, quarterback, was the number one draft pick for the Jacksonville Jaguars last year. The year before, Joe Burrow, quarterback for the Bengals, and the year before, again, quarterback, Kyler Murray. I'm starting to see a bit of a pattern there. So in terms of top picks this year, I mean, when I was doing the bit of diligent research earlier, Aiden Hutchinson, Trayvon Walker, all popped up, and a few others as well. And then you're looking into, I suppose, the first round quarterback prospects, the like of Malik Willis, Kenny Pickett. I suppose I'm just naming names here, but in your expert opinion, yeah, who should we be looking out for?
Well, it's really interesting, Shane, because as you alluded to it, you had three kind of franchise-changing quarterbacks when you talk about a Kyler Murray, Joe Burrow, Trevor Lawrence, okay? Those guys are you know, supposed to, going to be and are the future of their franchises. There is really not a big, you know, franchise-altering player, and I'm talking quarterback or other position as well. You know, sometimes there's this stellar wide receiver or, you know, a defensive end. There really isn't anybody that is just grabbing all of the headlines. You mentioned a couple of the guys. Trayvon Walker at Georgia. He has emerged over the last week or so as now seeming to be the number one draft pick. But then Aiden Hutchinson at Michigan, who's kind of been in that position for the last couple of months. So those are defensive linemen. Again, they're not selling tickets with that. But that's how you build a strong defense and how you build a team and build a foundation is with players like this. They may not be as flashy. And I think if you look back to some of our earlier discussions this offseason, there's a reason why the Broncos went out and got Russell Wilson from Seattle, and the Commanders traded for Carson Wentz. I mean, you know, they were trying to get a known commodity at the quarterback position that they didn't feel existed or was going to be available in the draft this year, like you've seen the last couple of seasons.
So if there's no real standout, is it a case of just it's going to be a bit more broader? And how will that affect then the general level of competition next year when the draft is all complete?
So I think, Shane, the interesting thing to pay attention to is what do some of these teams, like the San Francisco 49ers and Jimmy Garoppolo, there's been rumors of a breakup is imminent because they have Trey Lance waiting in the wings. Do they decide to pull the trigger at some point and trade Jimmy Garoppolo to someone for a couple of draft picks? Or do the Cleveland Browns do the same thing around Baker Mayfield, you know, that they've signed Deshaun Watson? There's a couple of, and the New York Jets, they have, you know, two picks in the top 10. The Eagles have a bunch of picks. The Saints have a bunch of picks in the first round. Does somebody decide, I'm not going to make this pick, I'm going to trade it, and I'm going to go for another, you know, 2 second round picks and another third round pick? And it's really all about building depth and, you know, building maybe it's not a superstar, but maybe it's a guy who'll be a superstar in 3 years. And how do you put a price on that right now? I mean, that's what the fascinating kind of jockeying that these general managers and coaches are trying to do over the next couple of days. Again, there's just not five or six just attention-grabbing players in this draft, but there's a lot of good players that you can build a solid base around and stock up for the future.
Okay. Happy days, Shep. That is a fantastic explainer for perhaps some of the newcomers this year. I'm still searching for an NFL team for the new season. I have an uncle living over New York who has tried to drive the Jets into me, who haven't been.
Oh,
to,
God. No, yeah. don't do that to yourself.
I was wondering, everyone's response is the same, but however. So,
well, I mean, look, they were, you know, Joe Namath, that was like 1969. Yeah. That's the last time that they've, you know, the most famous thing that they've had happen to them since then is something called the butt fumble. Just look it up. That's okay. All you need to know. But it's called the butt fumble. Look, as always, I humbly welcome any and all of my Irish friends to cheer on the New Orleans Saints. We have plenty of room on the bandwagon. It's a holy nickname. There's a lot of simpatico there. I'm just saying.
Okay. Good sell. Listen, Shep, gentlemen, as always, really appreciate you taking the time as we end our NFL chat there. As I have my broadcast coordinator, Laura Lee Davis, in my ear saying the Jets are like the Shelburne of the NFL, which I've had a little sleep over that one. That's a bit harsh. But moving on to...
Saints.
Say again,
you've
Donald?
Just been advised to follow the Saints.
It's the last time I invited St. Patrick's Athletic fan in studio to keep me company. If you're listening, David Snay, that applies to you as well. But we do have the small matter, I suppose, of the UEFA Champions League. And I'm delighted to welcome the sports editor from the Racing Post, Mark Langdon, joins me on the line as well. We do have a bit of team news in from Manchester City. So Ederson in goal, Stones, Diaz, captains aside, Laporte, Zinchenko, Rodri, Kevin De Bruyne, Bernardo Silva, Riyad Mahrez, Phil Foden and Gabriel Jesus. And as I mentioned a little bit earlier on, the Real Madrid team news came in much earlier. So Mark Langdon, I was chatting to Didi and he was giving his insight on tonight's big one. How do you see it panning out?
I think that Real Madrid will struggle really in midfield without Casemiro. I think he's a really big miss for them. Very much the controller in there. He protects the defence very well. It's a position that Manchester City love to exploit with Bernardo Silva and Kevin De Bruyne. So that's a pretty big out, I think, for Real Madrid. As far as City, obviously much changed in the fullback areas, you know, without both first choice fullbacks, and they sort of, you know, at their best, Walker and Cancelo would do a lot of that attacking and overlapping and causing a lot of problems. So it wouldn't be a surprise if it was a bit of a grind really for City before they eventually get the win. I mean, it's not going to be as ugly as that game against Atletico Madrid, I wouldn't have thought, but I'm not sure that it'll be, you know, plain sailing for City, but I do think that they're the better team. And with Casemiro out, that's probably just another tick, really, in their box. So I'd probably sort of edge towards a low-scoring home win.
OK, well, yeah, certainly with the team news in there, I suppose. And it was a really nice synopsis in The Guardian of, so here we are, come at the hour, the nowhere citizens beating down the mahogany panel doors of the shadowy Madrid elite, cartwheeling across the dining tables like sky blue Spice Girls, and doing all this mainly by spending $433 million a year in salaries, hiring the greatest coach in the world, setting their lawyers against anyone in their path and trying to join a Super League. The mention there of the greatest coach in the world, I suppose all eyes on Pep as well. I mentioned this to Didi because there's a lot of pressure on Pep from the owners, from fans and from everyone alike to get City over the line of the Champions League.
Yeah, there is. Obviously there is. I mean, it's the competition that they want. It's the competition that they almost demand. But that's the beauty of the Champions League, is that you can't do that. And Paris Saint-Germain have got, you know, all the money in the world, just like Manchester City, and they've been desperate for the Champions League and they haven't been able to win it. And, you know, it's not as easy as just, you know, just saying you want to win. And, you know, Pep Guardiola, I think, has got something to prove in this competition, because, you know, you could argue, and people have argued, that he's only ever won it when he's had Messi in the team. He, of course, couldn't get Bayern Munich to a final, never mind win it. I mean, I just tend to think that, you know, he's made some mistakes in the Champions League. There's no doubt about that. But in this season's competition and in the knockout stages, I think he's been a little bit more pragmatic. I don't think he's been as risky with his team selection. I think he is maybe learning that he has overthought it in the past, and he's just picked really, you know, the best team I think he could have done tonight. And that hasn't always been the case, I think it's fair to say, in the Champions League.
Yeah, for sure. Hopefully from a neutral perspective, it is an entertaining match anyway. As I mentioned, that is a match you can watch live on RT2 television. Mark, just before I do let you go, I suppose you are our European football expert, and just looking across Europe, PSG and Bayern Munich, business as usual. But for a lot of their fans, a bit of an anticlimactic end to league seasons. Are people just getting sick of winning, if that's even a thing?
I don't think Bayern Munich fans ever get sick of winning. That's 10 in a row for them. But, of course, it wasn't followed by any other trophies. And that's the kind of standards they set at Bayern. You know, they were disappointed to go out of the Champions League, of course, to Villarreal. Went out of the German Cup as well. So they won't see it as a particularly good season, even though they've won the league. Paris Saint-Germain, it's not been a good season for them. They've won the league, but they haven't played good football at all, despite that galaxy of stars they've got in the attacking third. Pochettino is set to pay for that. Well, you know, he's almost certain to lose his job. Just a matter of when, really, that happens. And probably, I would say, probably two front runners to replace him would be Zinedine Zidane would be their first choice. And if not, maybe then Conte becomes an option. But I'm pretty sure that Zidane is likely to at least be the first place that Paris go in terms of trying to find a replacement for Pochettino, which, like I say, is just almost certain to happen now.
Okay, and for any Spurs fans listening, could be a Conte Pochettino switch. Who knows? Watch this space. Mark Langdon, thank you very much. Hopefully it is an entertaining match. That is all we have time for on this edition of Game On. My many thanks to all of our guests today. And indeed, Donal Fallon. Donal Fallon, I should say. Twice I've mispronounced your name, Donal. It must be.
Everyone trips over my name.
Historian, as I say, Brainstorm is 8:30 on Monday. Cannot wait for it to see it on RT1. Donal, thanks for your company. But that is it. Thanks for listening. We'll be back tomorrow evening. We'll be down in Punchestown and the Roadcaster for the rest of the week. So do, as I say hello if you're around at the Punchestown Festival.